This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Hey, so glad to have you all here, and thank you, Parker. Welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And once again, we have another incredible blues musician as our guest today. His first discovery of the blues was on Boston University's WBUR, where he heard the late, great Albert King's tune, I Love Lucy. But that didn't quite catch him until he heard Muddy Waters' slow tune, Long Distance Call, and the hook, as they say, was set. His early teen rock influences faded away into the distance, and years later, he would connect with Muddy, and he spent the years 1973 to 1980 as his guitarist. He has worked with a literal who's who in the blues through the years, so you absolutely know that he has some stories, and we're about to get into them. Musician, songwriter, educator, author, and blues standard bearer. Oh, wait, we need to add label owner, too. Wow. Steady rolling, Bob Margolin. Welcome to Time Signatures, my friend.
Thanks so much. Don't start me talking. I'll tell everything I know, like Sonny Boy Williamson said.
Well, you are absolutely welcome to share your stories. That's what this is all about. We are doing our best, our level best, to keep the blues alive and preserve these stories for future generations. And we're going to talk about some of the work that you're doing with future generations down the road here. But I have to start off and have you tell the story. For those that don't know, where did the nickname Steady Rollin' come from?
Well, it's funny. I should be asked about that by a DJ. There's a DJ who had a radio show on the Emerson College radio station in Boston in the mid-1970s, and a lot of the local musicians used to hang with him. And at a Muddy Waters show in Boston, he asked me if I could arrange for him to introduce the band. And I said, sure, and I could. And so he speed-wrapped the entire introduction. And when he got to me, he said, "Hey, I'm from right here in Boston. Steady rolling, Bob Margolin. Steady rolling rhymes with Margolin." And and Steady Rolling Man was a Robert Johnson song. So he was on many levels doing the right thing. Since I had already been traveling quite a few hundred thousand miles or something by that time, I thought, I'll take that name. I'll go with that.
It's a great name, too. Yeah, absolutely. Bob, talk to me about your first taste of the blues. Where were you? What were you doing? Take me through that moment, if you would.
Well, I did hear it in town, and there was a really good local music scene, and young people who weren't old enough to go to the clubs did go to them and see some of the legends that were still with us. And eventually, by the late 60s and early 70s, I was seeing B.B. King and Muddy Waters and a lot of the great ones that were coming through town. And in the early 70s, old Hound Dog Taylor came through there right when he was discovered by Bruce Iglauer, and Bruce was building Alligator Records around that first release by Hound Dog. I remember seeing him in a club there. I remember seeing Howlin' Wolf in that same club that was called Joe's Place in, I believe, Somerville, Massachusetts, Cambridge, one of those. And I remember the Howlin' Wolf show was so packed that people were literally standing on the bar.
That is incredible. I have to tell you, I'm jealous because I was born just a little bit too late to catch some of these guys. And, you know, I remember hearing about Muddy Waters when I was growing up and never got to see him play, of course. By the time I was an adult, he was already passed from the scene, unfortunately. But I want to step back from the beginning just a little bit here. Back when you're 15 years old, delving into some rock and roll guitar licks inspired by Chuck Berry, and by the time you're 18, you're appearing on your first recording with a Boston psychedelic band called Freeborn. I'd like you to kind of take me through that period of time, Bob. And did you know that you wanted to be a musician from the start?
I began to feel it when I started playing guitar, which was inspired by listening to Chuck Berry. And I picked one up and said, oh, I can play this. And I actually could. But I pursued it quite a bit. That would have been in 1964. Mm-hmm. And was in bands, in high school bands, and all through college. And so by the time I graduated college in 1970, I got a little part-time job in a parking lot to make sure there was some income. And then was doing gigs at night with whatever band I was playing with, and increasingly they were bands that were very blues-oriented. You talked about that first recording with the Freeborn. Mm-hmm. There was one bluesy song on it that I wrote. I didn't sing it, but another guy who was a much better singer did sing it. But that was a little detour out of pure blues, but it was a band that was jamming and rocking and very influenced by the exciting music scene that was happening in the late 60s, where there were all kinds of great creative musicians who felt free to be as exploratory as they wanted to be, mixing styles. It was a tremendously exciting time for music, and I was as influenced by that type of creativity as I was about blues music itself. So I was going both wide and deep at that time in my life, which is a late teenager or a young adult. That's certainly a time when a lot of people develop.
Now, fast forward with me to 1973. Muddy Waters decides that he wants to add you to his band to play guitar. How did that opportunity develop? And could you take us inside that conversation? I mean, that had to be like your absolute biggest moment as a musician, yes?
It was a real crossroads moment, because there's everything that came before it and then everything that came after it from being associated with Muddy and learning from him personally. So, yeah, that was a, let's say, a crossroads or milestone, but extremely important. I don't know if I could put a superlative on it, because actually, when people do ask, what was the big deal? Because people always want to take that shortcut and get to that. But the answer was anytime I was playing blues on a bandstand with Muddy Waters, that was the big deal. That was the major thrill. And it happened a few thousand times.
And I know that, you know, through, because I do my homework, that, you know, Muddy was like the pinnacle for you. That was your hero, if you will.
Well, he had been my favorite musician for a long time, and in the early 70s, I started to be in some bands that opened shows for him. And imagine what a thrill it was for me that he was nice to me. He saw that I was trying to play old school Chicago blues. The bands I was in were just smart enough to not to do Muddy Waters songs when we were in front of Muddy Waters. But we did lots of his songs in our other live shows. But Muddy could hear me playing Jimmy Rogers, Jimmy Reed, Little Walter songs, Elmore mm-hmm. James, basically what he later called old school Chicago blues. And yeah, that was a thrill for me, that this person that was my musical main character was nice to me and encouraging. And he started an engagement in Boston in August 1973. And I was there on the very first night, first one that walked into the club when the doors opened on a Tuesday night. And I went in, the first one I saw was his harmonica player, who I had also met, you know, when we were opening shows for Muddy. George Mojo Dreamy Eyed, good looking dude, as Muddy would introduce him. And fine harmonica player and a nice fellow. And he asked me the fateful question, got any reefer? And I did.
There you go.
And but then he said, oh, Muddy just fired one of the guitar players last night and said, wait here. And I'm just standing there, and Muddy comes out of the dressing room and says, oh, good. Come to my hotel room tomorrow and bring a guitar. And I just, you know, I could see my future flash in front of my eyes. Muddy correctly presumed that if I could get to be in his band, I would want to be.
Sure.
He was 100% right. And could almost see all the opportunities in the rest of my life in that moment in 1973, or I could. And so I went to, I didn't have a acoustic guitar, but I brought a very small amp and the electric guitar that I had to his hotel room. I had him scoped out good too. He said, play it. So I played the introduction to like an old school Chicago blues in E, and he started smiling, and then he started singing a blues along with it.
Mm, that had to be a moment for you, definitely.
Yeah, big deal. I don't think he thought I was a great guitar player, but he could see that I wanted to learn, and I really loved that style of music, so he gave me a chance, and it did put me on the road I ride. He called his girlfriend into the room and said, listen to this kid play my stuff. Go ahead, do it again. It was a lot more like a puppy doing a trick.
Sure.
But I was Muddy's puppy right there. And he gave me a chance, and I did everything I could to be helpful to him on the bandstand, to be helpful to him off the bandstand if I could be. And also to use it as a foundation for the music I played with him and since that time.
You're listening to Time Signatures with Jim Irvin. My guest today is Steady Roland Bob Margolin, and we are having a great time talking about his work with Muddy Waters through the years, and we've got more to cover here, so I'm going to keep moving. Bob, you've shared the stage and studio with some of the biggest names in the blues, including Muddy, Pinetop Perkins, Bob Couture, Johnny Winter, and James Cotton, just to name a few. Looking back over the years, if you could sit in with one blues artist you never got to join, who would it be and why?
You know, I think I've been asked that before, but I was so lucky to get to play with the people that I did play with, especially during the time that I was in Muddy's band, and to be able to, like, people would come around and wanting to sit in and doing that, and then they very often did. Sometimes I was the one that was the go-between and arranged it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a thrill to do that. However good or bad it actually sounded, just to be around people that I admired and respected a lot.
Absolutely.
So that was a thrill, as well as not as deep as playing Muddy's blues with him, but there was Muddy brought me and his piano player Pinetop Perkins to the Last Waltz. And about 7 o'clock the next morning, after people had been jamming all night, Bob Dylan walked in and said, I thought we were going to get to play together.
Oh,
so I
man.
Stuck around, and he put together a blues jam that had him singing Robert Johnson songs with me and Eric Clapton on guitar, Yvon Helm on the drums. Ron Wood was playing bass because somebody had to do it.
Sure.
Dr. John on the piano and Paul Butterfield.
Wow.
And it sounded like it was 7 in the morning. But looking around and just seeing that, I said to myself, this will never happen again. However, maybe in 2023, I'll talk about it on a radio show.
And I have to tell you the stories of hearing this, it's a time I wish I could have been around for. I really do, because I can't even imagine wrapping my head around, you know, with Dylan and Clapton and, you know, Muddy and everybody just having a blues jam. That just had to be such a thrill. According to my count, you have some 20 albums to your credit, including 6 with Muddy and 1 with Johnny Winter. As you look over your body of work, are there any favorite projects that come to mind? Maybe something you haven't done yet that you're working on?
Well, I have explored anything I wanted to explore on my own albums for a long time. I just always, just in life, if I make my best music almost and have a good time on a bandstand or in a studio, things will take care of themselves. Everything will work out all right, I was inspired by a few things to make my new album, which is called Thanks, and it's basically thanks. There's 3 reasons I call that. First, to thank Muddy Waters for that crossroads moment where he took me on the road and all those wonderful things happened to me afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Also to thank the musicians that I met because of my connection to him. And also there was a very special guitar that I bought in the early part of 1975. And immediately Muddy brought me and Pontop Perkins, the piano player, to Woodstock to do an album produced by Yvon Helm called the Muddy Waters Woodstock album.
Yes, sir.
This is his last album for Chess Records. And I happen to have that guitar with me and I brought it.
Wow.
And then the next year in 1976, Yvon invited Muddy and me and Pinetop to The Last Waltz, which is a legendary concert and concert film. And I had that same guitar with me on the road at the time that we heard about it. So it's on there in the movie too.
Fantastic.
So I wanted to thank that guitar.
Yes, sir.
I played it on every track of my new album called Thanks.
And I am looking forward to getting a copy of that. I do have a copy of the Woodstock album on the way. And I think I found it. It was after a conversation, I think, with Bob Courtois. And I decided I had to have it because it's just one of those things that I enjoy the history that you see and hear in that album. And so it's one of the pieces I'm really looking forward to getting when it gets here. And I'll definitely let you know what I think of it when I get a chance to listen to it, as well as your new album, sir. So I want to talk about your awards that you've received along the way, some blues music awards, but including your most recent a Lifetime Achievement Award that you received with Bob Strozier and John Primer, another former guitarist for Muddy Waters. How cool is that?
Well, it was a real thrill to be in that company. I admire both of them so much. John Primer's older than I am, but he was in Muddy Waters' band after I was in it.
Yes, sir.
So we went to the same school, but at different times. Also, John spent a lot of time in Chicago in the 70s playing with the great local musicians who were still around. He did a lot of playing with Junior Wells, I believe. And Bob Strozier is our foremost electric bass player, and he's going to be 93 in December.
Mm.
And so I'm not as old as these guys, and I'm not sure how the nomination or award process goes for Blues Blast. They don't put out that information because they don't want people trying to hit on them, I suppose.
Sure.
But I was really thrilled and honored and surprised.
As I can imagine you were, definitely. Bob, in one of your interviews, you said that you idolized the harp playing of Little Walter. Now, I know you really can't compare he and Bob Courtois, but you've done some work with him recently, yes?
Bob Courtois, yes.
Yes, sir.
Little Walter's gone, and he took it with him.
Yes, sir.
But, he left his mark on almost every harmonica player, at least everyone that was younger than him. And just an amazingly creative musician, probably for context, kind of similar to the way Jimi Hendrix was for blues rock. You could hear what his influences were, but he sure took it someplace personal and very, very creative. And Little Walter was like that for the harmonica from the late 40s till he passed in, I believe, 1967 or 8. A short life. Can't help but wonder what would have happened if he lived longer.
You know, clearly other musicians like yourself, as you get older, you're engaged in promoting the blues to the upcoming generations. And I know that I read about you and your encounter with an 11-year-old Chris Stone Kingfish, and the work that you did with him, you know, the giving him an encouragement and whatnot. But I'd like to know, you know, you guys do a lot of work with the younger generation, and I'm just wondering how you're received by the younger musicians.
I really don't know what we look like from their perspective. I know how I felt about the older musicians. For the ones that I really idolized, it was a super thrill for me.
Sure.
But there's a lot of young folks that, and I'm not as famous as the people that I idolized when I was young. So I really can't say. I think some of them really are excited about it, but they're all nice to me. And I try to give them everything I can. And it's amazing to have the perspective of having heard something from Muddy Waters in the mid 1970s and be able to pass it on to somebody who is, between 8 and 25 years old now. And say, here's what Muddy said about that, or what he advised about hitting that particular lick, or his approach to picking with his right hand. I can tell them some of the things that Muddy told me very directly.
And that's just passing it on to the next generation. That's what it's all about, man. All right.
I believe Muddy would want that.
Absolutely. Bob, I have to ask you, where can we go to book you? Where can we go to learn about your music? And of course, we have to buy some CDs. So why don't you share that information with the listeners?
Well, I don't work with a booking agency anymore. And so sometimes there get to be holes in my calendar and I wonder what's going to happen next. And then I have a day like I had today where two musicians that I knew from a long time ago called me about separate, really big projects to see if I was interested in being a part of them, which both of them I was. And I was just thrilled and just felt so lucky. For my particular situation, not wanting to get in a van and drive up and down the highways and lose money, because I've been in a few million miles in vans with vans, and I just don't do that anymore. I usually get on a plane from Charlotte, North Carolina, about 80 miles away, and take a nonstop flight to somewhere and go play and then go home as soon as I can afterwards. And that has worked out really well for me. And I would say, I wonder if it's going to get dry out there, but I just got two calls today for things that may turn out to be really big deals in 2024.
Fantastic.
So you caught me at a time I'm feeling good about it. So it's just getting in touch with me through the email on my website works better than using Facebook, because if I let the notifications go from Facebook be audible or visible without me checking them every once in a while, my whole life would be one big ding, 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 ding.
Right.
And but with the email situation, that works pretty good. And then we can have a phone call and try and work out something that works well all around. I've been doing that with blues societies lately for a few gigs later this year that I'll actually be able to drive to instead of fly.
Which will be nice, I imagine.
After having flown somewhere for each of the last 5 weeks. And I am really tired of flights and airports, but I also realize that's a nice problem to have for somebody that's still trying to play in 2023.
Yes, sir. Well, Bob Margolin, it has been a pleasure to have you on Time Signatures. As always, we wish you the best. And as I said, looking forward to hearing the new CD, Thanks. We'll spend some time checking that out, and we will report back to you. But thank you so much for appearing and being with us on the program.
My pleasure. It's been nice to talk to you.
All right, my friend. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Time Signatures. We appreciate you, the listener, as well. Thank you so much for helping us do our part to keep the blues alive. We'll see you soon.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Ervin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.